The Birth of the Super Vet. The mackerel stripes of a brightly freezing moon grabbed at the clouds and crept through my ice-scribbled bedroom window. My small white rickety bed had a very thin mattress on even thinner springs that squeaked with every movement, so I tried my best to remain still. My bedroom was one of five in an old stone farmhouse, and being furthest from the chimney breast, it was so cold that you could write your name on the frosted window pane. If your leg fell out of bed in the middle of the night, when you woke up, you'd think that someone had chopped it off. It was still warmer than outside, though. A family of mice had set up house behind the skirting board and had gnawed a big hole in the flowery wallpaper. Mammy had put out the mouse trap, but because I couldn't bear to wake up and find one dead in it, I kept covering it up with a t-shirt. I wasn't long in bed, it seemed, when the alarm went off. It was a big old green and white metal alarm clock with a tick-tock that I hated, and I still hate the noise to this day. Another trusty t-shirt was used to muffle the sound, but this didn't stop the ferocious clang of the two bells and the little hammer on the top of it. It was time to get up and check on the sheep. It was 1978, and I was 10 years old. During lambing season throughout the spring, Daddy always did the morning shift, and I always did the night shift at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, which probably goes some way to explain why I'm a night owl. One thing for sure, I am not a morning person. In 1970s Ballyfin, in County Leash in the Republic of Ireland, lambing was generally an outdoors pursuit. Well, it certainly was on the farm of Sean Fitzpatrick, my father. There wasn't enough shed space to house the ewes before they lambed. Only once they had lambed, or you thought they were going to have a lamb imminently, could they then be brought in out of the cold. Of course, this was frequently misjudged, and they lambed in the field. I plunged from the snug, squeaky bed into the cold darkness, the wisps of moonlight like freezing icicles jabbing at my feet. It was so cold, I layered up quickly, pulling on an old jumper over my check pajamas, then a padded green jacket, a woolly hood over my tousled mop of hair, and trousers that were too big for me by virtue of being handed down from my older brother. I often had an image of being frozen to the spot, like someone petrified by very cold lava from a frozen volcano. Stumbling through the yellow door of my bedroom, which to this day is still adorned with a very small china plaque saying private, I knocked two of the keyrings I had collected off the nails on the wall. One a small soldier. That's what I felt like, a small, lambing soldier. Downstairs by the door of our back kitchen, I pulled on oversized wellies onto my skinny little legs and marched out into the black night. February frost had starched the fields in silent rigidity, and only the muffled bleating of sheep in various states of restless awakening and the quiet sounds of lambs slipping on the grass or eagerly nuzzling the udders of their mothers were palpable through the half-moonlight. I did the head count. 57. Where was number 58? Feckin' hell, I'd have to tour the ditches. Being surrounded by deep drains along the hedgerows, the fields at home were woefully equipped to deal with lambing, but that was just the way it was. It wasn't until much later that most of the lambing was done in a shed bedded with straw. Oh, the luxury. About 20 minutes into my sub-Arctic trek, I found her. Half drowned at the bottom of one of the deep drainage ditches, struggling to keep her head above the freezing surface. Half dead with exhaustion, yet half alive in the throes of labour. Even at that age, I had a couple of years' experience of lambing sheep, and my wee hands worked in my favour. There was no way that I was going to be able to haul the ewe up the sloping bank and out of the ditch, which was about 4 or 5 feet deep. So I slid down on the frosty mud alongside her. Her rear end was submerged, so I rolled up my sleeve and delved through the freezing water, putting my small hand into the ewe's birth canal. Oh, it was the weirdest combination of biting cold and a kind of warm, moist birth passage. The lamb was stuck, head down in front of the pelvic inlet with one leg facing my hand. Shit! Bollocks! In doing so much forbidden cursing in my head, at least I wouldn't have to sin by inventing non-existent sins in next Friday's confessional, so I'd actually have something to confess. I was not good at many things at that age. In fact, I'd say I was good at absolutely nothing at all, except lambing sheep. I pushed on the lamb's head until it was back further into the womb, which wasn't that hard because by now the mother was hardly pushing at all. Then I pushed the leading leg in after it beyond the pelvis. That's the trick. You'd never get the other front leg up and into the pelvis and the birth canal unless you got the leading leg and the head back in first. Then my small hand ran from the one leg to the other, over the breastbone, until two little clawings popped up. Oopsie daisy, there we go. Get the nose up between the front legs, steady the head between the knuckles of the front feet, keep both legs moving out of the birth canal by holding onto the knuckles, and with the second hand holding the skull in place with the eye sockets, and pull. Baby, pull. And I did. With such ferocity that I was flung back on my arse into the sub-zero ditch water with a tiny female lamb on my chest.